everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions. I'm Chuck. I'm at the Perform Better Seminar. I'm with Jesse Buckley and Mike Folks and my brother Kevin.
Kevin.
And we just did an amazing interview with Dan John, and somehow we lost it. So Dan is nice enough to do another one with us, and he's gracious with his time, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate it, Dan, because the first talk was awesome. So I think we're going to top it this time.
You bet. Well, actually, for a moment, I thought it was just deja vu. You know, it's like, wow, I've seen this before, but thanks for clearing that up. This actually is, because, you know, between the drinking and the age, you know, my memory is...
At least I won't be crying on this one.
You might cry. All right, let's bring this thing.
So, anyways, Dan, we were talking before about the Perform Better seminars, and we were saying that that this is probably one of the, like, I've only been to like maybe two or three of these, not Perform Better, but two or three strength seminars. And like, as far as for seminars go, this is the best one I've ever been to. It's like, if anybody's ever been to a Perform Better seminar, they give you an itinerary and they give you all like the slides of any of the lectures that you're going through. It's in a huge book. I mean, I don't know how many couple hundred page book.
It's massive.
And then they give us like backpacks, really cool backpacks. And everything's done top notch. So, I mean, even, like, the social events are done with, like, you know, great food, crab and sliders and beer, which I may have had one yesterday. but we were talking about how great these seminars are. Do you like coming to these, Dan?
Well, yeah. One thing, folks, so we are literally going over the same stuff we did for about an hour. Yeah. So I kind of feel like you guys should already know this.
But we'll briefly touch on this, and then we'll go to
most,
other stuff.
What most people don't know is that it was Perform Better is what changed my career. You know, I had a book, and it was good, and I certainly coached a long time. But, you know, a couple years back, Larry Draper, who is the publisher for On Target, said, do you want to go to Perform Better? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I was like, all, you know, gung-ho to, you know, sit in the lectures and stuff. And she goes, no, I want you to meet, you know, with people and you know, and maybe even do this thing. And it was like, so I came down, and when I met Chris Poyer, who runs Perform Better, he was so gracious, so kind, and he invited me to be a speaker. And I'm like, I didn't think I was good enough. I was like, wow, I'm not good enough to do this, you know. And it's just funny because there's this, I guess there's a sense because of, I guess I have a style that makes me think like I'm very comfortable doing, like I've been doing it a million years, but really, I've only been doing this workshop speaker thing for about 6 years. And it was Perform Better that got me doing this.
Yeah.
And within a few years, it is my entire career. So, you know, when we talk about game changers in my life, you know, Larry introducing me to Chris would be one of those massive earth shifters in my career and life. So, and I like it very much. I don't think people realize, you know, Tom Plummer, I sat, you know, I, by the way, you guys see me sit in the lectures. Mm-hmm. I always go to lectures when I'm here. Tom last night talked about this important thing about your ongoing education. And I can't stress, no matter what you do in life, ongoing education is so important. Maybe you already know it all, but okay, you got to review the fundamentals. Yeah. But maybe there's one thing you pick up, and I don't know what the cost is on Perform Better, because you know I'm on the other side of things. But it's a 3-day event. Well, actually, it's 4.
Yeah.
Because you came on Thursday,
yeah.
Right? The booklet, the sitting around, and then what we do, and that's the thing a lot of you might miss, folks. And I'm not selling Perform Better, yeah. I'm selling ongoing education. Is that we've been hanging around for, well, now it's got to, we're thinking about 3 hours with yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking. I know your story. I know your story. We have Kevin here.
Kevin.
Stupid
Kevin.
We were talking to Kevin about, you know, his service in Kuwait and some other places around this fine planet. And but I wouldn't have known any of that without this, you know. And that's what I like is the linkage. You know, we get together. I like that a lot.
The social interaction between like everybody has been awesome here. Like everybody's really cool, and everybody. Dan's trying to take the tattoo off of Jesse. But like the interaction and whatnot between people, and like I mean, like you and I did an interview a couple weeks ago or so, and it was just, it was fantastic, and it was like unprepared really, and it was just like a more spontaneous thing, but it was awesome. Like I heard the interview and it's just engaging and great. But to finally get to meet you and to like finally get to see like Great Cook and like to see all these different people that like I've read for many years. If you haven't been to one of these seminars, it's something that's really worth its weight in gold.
One thing people tell me is that after they hear my talk, they go back and they'll read one of my books and they'll say, it is so weird because you talk like you write. Mm-hmm. And that what they'll say is they'll read one of my books later on and my voice. And they'll hear, it's like they're sitting there. So that's one of the nice things. You get to meet, if you read someone's articles and books and you meet them, sometimes you can really put things into a better context, you know?
Absolutely. You know? How did you, like, what was your first book you read or you wrote?
Oh, that'd be Never Let Go.
Okay.
But actually, I had written, and they're still on my website, danjohn.net. Mm-hmm. I have three free PDF books. One's called From the Ground Up, Basic Introduction to Weightlifting. There's another one called A Contrarian Approach to the Discus Throw. And a third one that's From Dad to Grad, a book I wrote my daughter when she was in the eighth grade. Now she's 27. And those are free. And, you know, would you mind, if you could, just find them on the thing? And would you mind linking them? That'd be great. And so those are three. They get three free books straight up. And then my website, you know, danjohn.net has...
A million
thousands and thousands of pages of stuff. Literally, I've been told that if you decide to download my stuff, you need two reams of paper if you decide to print it.
Well, if you two look, and also, like, not only that, but like the stuff that you link on there of different people, like the things that you link on there of like the Art of Manliness and just the different videos on Wandering Weights.
Yeah, it's a Wednesday. It's every Wednesday, I have a little newsletter called Wandering Weights, and it's just. It's how to win it, sometimes how to win at chess or checkers, and so it's just all over the place. But I think you need to be that way. We're talking about, you know, being
a well-rounded
person, yeah.
Yeah, at the gym that we just opened, we have a chessboard set up at the front desk.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, is this like where you train the body and the mind? And we're like, yes, that's actually exactly what it is. That's what we do.
It all interrelates. It all interrelates. I mean, mind, body, soul, all that stuff's important.
Well, it's interesting about chess, and the reason I strongly suggest learning it is if you take my queen early, the game ain't over. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things, like when I'm working with quarterbacks or young coaches, that there's this idea that, that happened, so it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, one time we were in a football game, we got down 13-0. Oh, I don't think there was a minute off the clock. They took the opening kickoff for a touchdown, and then we fumbled, and they took the ball in and scored 13-0. Well, I mean, I looked at my team and said, you know, do you guys want to go home or do you want to, you know, play the next, you know, a game ain't over, and we ended up winning 14-13. And that's a great lesson. And chess teaches that. Yes. There's always another option.
Yes.
You know, I can take that piece or I have all those other options. That's an important thing. It's an important thing for life. It's a good lesson. I've always told people that chess, American football, and war are all the same game. Just one's a little... chess a little less lethal than the other two options. Yes.
You know, it's funny, we're sitting here, like my brother came in from he lives in Chicago, and I haven't seen my brother in a little while, and his name is
Kevin.
And so Kevin is a Marine, and he's in the pipe fitters. He's becoming a pipe fitter right now. He's an apprentice right now, but he was, you know, gracious enough to come in and hang out with us. And you served how many years in the Marines, Kevin?
4 years I served, Chuck. So I'm actually currently still in my inactive reserve time because you do four years active and then 4 years inactive. So, yeah, I got about two more years left. So I just recently, it was probably about 3 weeks ago, I went downtown Detroit for, it was kind of like a little seminar, just to kind of rally all the guys in the area that are in the inactive reserves, you know, just to make sure that they're doing okay and everything. If they have any benefits from the VA, they're getting that, because especially being a veteran, you know, the VA does play a pretty big role, so that's very helpful. And then, of course, they try to get you to either come back active duty or join a reserve unit, you know, to be once a month. But, yeah, no, it was a great experience, Chuck. I absolutely loved it. You know, it's great. Actually, currently out here in Chicago, I live with my best friend from the service, he was my platoon sergeant. He was kind of the one that got me into the skilled trades and just kind of showed me the way. You know, he's kind of like, you know, someone that I can look up to, but he's also a very good friend of mine. You know, he's like a mentor, though I do have many in my life. But no, it was great. I do not regret joining the service one bit. It's taught me, you know, how not only just social skills, but, you know, more of, you know, kind of like the old saying goes, how to be a man. So, you know.
Well, you're definitely doing it well.
Thank you.
So, Dan, you did some things with the military, correct?
Yeah. Well, I kind of just piggyback on something Kevin said.
Please.
He used the word mentor. And it's interesting because everyone thinks there's a thing called a mentee, and there isn't. Mentor, if you read the book, The Odyssey, Ulysses' son, Telemachus, has a teacher, and the teacher's name is Mentor. And wouldn't it be great if 4,000 years from now, your name would be remembered as a great teacher? Mentor is the guy's name. And I just think, and whenever I hear the word mentor, I like to tell people that little thing. Because what we're doing is we're acknowledging a great teacher thousands of years later. Thousands of years later, we're still, you know, that your name. Well, for example, I hate to say this, but I mean, I haven't met many children named Adolf lately. You know, but you know, mentor is a lovely, and it's a guy's name, and it's nice to hear you say that because it means so much more. I'm weird about the meanings of things, and whenever people talk to me, sometimes some of my assistants will roll their eyes because here it comes, he's about to explain what the word means, you know, in an ancient language. Yeah, I know, but that's important, okay. Of course, I learned all that in my youth when I actually knew Homer. I went to high school with Homer. He played outside linebacker. He's good. I don't get you. Lost his vision. Sad story. I don't want to get into it.
So, like we were saying, like or we had mentioned that you had done some things for the military,
yeah.
And can you go into that a little bit? Or can you touch briefly on it?
I can touch briefly on it. Yeah, I have had this wonderful relationship for a long time. But then it got renewed in about 1998 when I'll just tell you a quick story.
Okay.
So one of the things, if you look at some of my pictures, especially of me training with, like, well, the picture on the cover of Never Let Go,
mm-hmm.
is actually, I have special forces with me. They're on this side of the camera behind me when that picture was taken. But I would train them in my backyard. And at the same time, you know, my wife would be grilling meat. And there's just a quick little story. And so I've always told my wife, my daughters know this too, is that, you know, it's okay to ask questions, but you got to also be very mindful that these are family men. These guys have a lot. You don't want too much information because you don't want to endanger their families. But one time, this guy leaned over to my wife and went like this. If anything ever happens, I'll take care of it. My wife went, okay. And that night she was like, Danny, when he said, don't ask any more questions. I think it means that if something bad happens, we won't have to bring in many people in the legal system. I think bad thing will be fixed. I think mostly it'd be shovels after that. But this guy was just, because the food was good and the training was great, so, you know, I got you covered. Okay. And she had this look on her face like, he meant, ditch, don't go down the road. I wouldn't say we're safe, but the consequences will be dealt with.
Kevin. So we talked before, and I'd like to touch on this again. You juggle a lot of different things. Like,
yeah.
You juggle, like, you know, like lectures and books, and you juggle, like, you know, seminars and training other people and training yourself, no less.
Yeah.
How do you do that and still maintain, like, the family unit? Because, I mean, I know family is extremely important to you.
Well, let's even go deeper than the first time. I mean,
sure.
Most people don't know what I do for a living. So I'm a senior lecturer at St. Mary's University in Twickenham, London. So I go to London to teach. But I'm also an instructor at Columbia College in religious studies. Mm-hmm. So I have these two full-time jobs, which I'm used to, plus all the travel. My Delta account, it was July, I think it is. I've flown 196,000 miles this year. So, yeah, I get around a little bit. I spend a lot of time in hotels. It's funny, you look back on it, and at the time, it was a real boon to our family. But my wife got a job with the federal government, the Department of Treasury, back in the 90s. And the thing most people don't know is that at the time, she was on the road 3 out of 4 weeks. So I had two full-time jobs because I was doing the professor job at night and I was an administrator during the day. And I had two daughters, but I was also training. And it's funny because I look back on those years as some of the best competitions of my life, because that's when I realized that this is when I first learned about performance. All I could do was perform at the top of my game. So I, you know, well, and I mentioned this the last time, she was gone a lot. In fact, when my two daughters became women, I was the lucky person to be able to deal with that in the home, which was just a nightmare. But what I did is I realized that with all this going on, that I had to use that stuff between my ears to make it work. So the first thing I did, I think it was so important, is have dinner as a family. So I came up with a menu. And the menu, steak and salad Mondays, chicken, Viking enchiladas on Tuesday, jambalaya on Wednesdays, breakfast and dinner on a Thursday. The reason I know it is because that's what we did for probably 20 years. That was the nice thing about that is when you have a menu, you can shop to the menu. So on Sunday, I shopped to the menu. I knew I needed eggs. I knew I needed bacon, you know, for Thursday. I needed chicken for Tuesday and Wednesday. I needed steak for Monday. I knew what I needed. It's an odd thing. I didn't talk about it in our first go around here, but when my daughters were, well, I made breakfast and dinner for my daughters throughout their entire academic life. And the reason was because we had a food menu. And then later I realized that it happened because I was looking at a laundry one day. I walked past the laundry and I said, I should do the laundry. And I realized, why don't I have a menu for it? So Monday was dark laundry. Tuesday was white laundry. Oh, switch those. Actually, it's money, but don't worry about it. That'd be sheets, underwear, towels, that kind of thing. Wednesday's bathroom. We clean the bathrooms. Thursdays, we clean the bedrooms. And what made that great is that that's what we did. And so the house never got... And here's what it does. Is it frees up your brain pan.
Yes.
Because when I'm walking past the white laundry basket and it's Saturday, my brain keeps walking because that's a Monday chore. And so it frees your brain pan up from all that distraction. Then I started noticing I was doing that in every aspect of my life. We go through a couple other ones that we do. When the girls were young, on Thanksgiving Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, they were driving us crazy. So we decided to put up Christmas on Thanksgiving Friday. We still put up Christmas on Thanksgiving Friday. And now we do a new thing with Amazon Prime, is we go shopping on Thanksgiving Friday. We open a bottle of wine or two, and we shop for all of Christmas on Thanksgiving Friday. And it gets now. The funny thing is, you can always tell where you were on the bottle of wine by the gift. So you're like, "Oh, thanks. Yeah, it made sense at the time." So the more I do that kind of thing, I tell you, a few minutes with pen and paper trumps all the idiocy in the world. You know, long term, a few minutes. It really is night and day what it can do for you. One of my goals as a father, and I did this as best I could, was to have dinner every night as a family. And there's no TV, you can have music on, sure, but no, there's no cell phones, there's no internet, there's no nonsense. Eat dinner as a family every night. And I tell you, you know, I mean, my wife and I are not perfect people by any means, but our daughters are okay. And I think the reason they're okay is because they had dinner every night. So my daughters know how to talk with adults because they talked every night with adults. And It's a free forum. They're allowed to have, my daughters are allowed to have opinions. I mean, I would say that my family has core values. I know we do. One is the absolute respect for the human person. But don't run too far with it. But it doesn't matter who you are. You're welcome in my home, and we will be treated with respect and dignity. Our family motto is, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And our family mission statement is, make a difference. And my daughters can tell you every one of those things word for word, because we would talk about things at dinner like, this is something happening in school. Well, is it important? What will make a difference? A friend of mine, Father Oscar Lukifer, one night was at our house for dinner, and Lindsay talked about how they were raising money for this other school that had been hit by this problem. They were raising money for them. Father Lukifer says, and that's my homily this Sunday. Her story was the sermon, because that's what he was going to use. So, sometimes at dinner you get homilies, and sometimes you get complaints, and sometimes you get, I hate, school or whatever the thing they hate that week. But the thing is, it's okay. And you talk and you learn things. And
and you keep an open communication. So that communication gets fostered, and that trust gets fostered, and that love gets fostered. And all of that keeps just, being reaffirmed.
Yeah. I think it was Socrates once said about somebody, they ate a bushel of salt together. Well, in the Middle East, you pour a little bit of salt in your food to keep from dehydrating. Or a bushel is a mass. Well, how many meals would it take to eat a bushel of salt? It was a phrase he used to describe friendship. You eat a bushel of salt together. So that's a lot of meals. And I used that in a article. I wrote a weekly article for 10 years for free. So 520 columns. And for free. I'm such a businessman. I talked about that phrase one time. And I talked about my brother Phil. My brother Phil and I, that's actually interesting. We've become very close because our kids have become close. But, we've had some rough elbows through our lives together. And one day he fell off a ladder doing a thing to help his church, and he broke both of his arms, and I felt for him. And someone said, well, I thought you and your brother, I go, no. And I said, we've eaten a bushel of salt together. Because, and that's, I think, if there is a key to raising kids or making friends, you got to eat a bushel. You got to have a lot of meals. Every day at 9:30, people from all the world come to my house to train. And we work out for about an hour and 10 minutes usually. And then we go to the Landmark Cafe there in Murray and have breakfast. And it's interesting because the more times you eat breakfast, Leo is the wait staff. Marianne owns the place. We come in, they say, hi, Dan, and hi, Mike, because we eat a bushel of salt together. And that's how you establish, that's how you establish friendship. And then I go out of my way to invent, there's a thing called practice Thanksgiving we do many times a year. About once every 2 months, we cook a turkey, invite everybody who wants to come to the house, and just bring a side dish. And we practice Thanksgiving, so we'll get it right when Thanksgiving comes around. Because it's just an idea. We have a party called Christmas Adam at our house. So you got Christmas Eve, you got Adam.
I like that, okay.
So Christmas Adam, everyone's got Christmas Adam off. So we throw our annual Christmas party on Christmas Adam. And everyone knows this.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that on Thanksgiving Friday we're doing this. And so what I've tried to do with every aspect of my life is to just put things in order. In my weight room, I have a thing. It's called Don't Forget. People think that's funny. It says Don't Forget. And it's all the stuff we forget. There's a stretching exercise we call Vents. We forget it. There's a thing called Original Strength from Tim Anderson. We're supposed to do it a couple days a week. We forget. So we put all those things you shouldn't forget on this little list on the board. And at every workout, I look at the board and I go, okay, let's do this today too. So we got the workout, but the other stuff that you just tend to toss out, because if you don't write it on the board, you're not going to see it, and you'll forget it, you shouldn't forget it. So
I think with everything, as you have to be structured. If you aren't as structured as you are and kind of as rigid with certain things as you are, I don't think you could do, half the things that you do between the training and then the travel and all that stuff. So if your mind was cluttered with stuff, I mean, it seems like even when you talk about training, simplicity is a big thing in your training. Like, people tend to overcomplicate things, like, extremely in our sport and strength sports or in training people. Like, you know, you got to balance on this and then, you know, use this type of pole and that type of thing. I think it all comes down, a lot of times it comes down to just the simplicity of it all.
Right. For us, it's push, pull, hinge, squat, load, and carry, and everything else. And the one of the we really just kind of have a check, you know, sometimes it's weekly and sometimes it's daily. You know, I'll look at our workouts and I'll say, you know, we haven't done any loaded carries. And I'm like famous for that because you'll forget it. And they're sitting right over there. We got a couple different kinds of farmer bars. We've got a sled right there. It's like, why aren't we using it? We forgot. And so one of the things we try to do every day is throw in the things we think are important early in the workout. So that's why I've told people for years, front squat first. You know, when you first get into the gym, just front squat first. Why front squat? Well, because if you front squat and you don't do anything else, it's a pretty good workout.
Mm-hmm.
So we do Turkish get-ups as part of our warm-up because we feel that Turkish get-ups have great value. And we do them with anything you can imagine. In fact, I now have come up with this idea for a hypertrophy workout where you press at every stop in a Turkish get-up because it makes you press in these five, you know, eight different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wonderful. I mean, it's just, but here, I'm 60. So in my age cohort, it's interesting. Statistically, the most dangerous thing I do every day is take a shower. Statistically. Me. The most dangerous thing I do is take a shower. So I actually, because the ground is the most dangerous thing someone my age could deal with.
Yeah.
So every time I do Turkish get-ups, there's a better and better chance that I'll be at my granddaughter Josephine's wedding. That simple little thing. You know, you can say, well, Dan, you eat bacon or oatmeal. Statistically, shut up. There's no difference at my age, at 60, between bacon and oatmeal. Statistically, there's none. But being careful about putting my foot in the shower, I do. And I travel a lot. So I'm in a lot of hotel bathrooms. And those floors, you know, you can get taken down.
Do you think about it, too? I mean, is
absolutely.
That something you think about?
I know. Shower hygiene. safety in the shower at my age is one of the most important things I do. But I also protect myself on the other side by getting up and down off the ground all the time when I'm training.
Do you, when you're training people, do you have people like, I mean, I know I've read a couple of your, or a lot of your articles, but you've said that you've had people get up like just with both hands and then get back down and then get up with one hand, use one hand to push off and then get back down.
Well, actually, in my hands on today, yeah, we'll do that. The drill is called the get back up.
Okay.
You'll find if, you know what, if you guys want, ping me an email and I'll send you the whole thing to just tag on to this talk.
Is that oh, absolutely, fair? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just, what a get back up drill is.
That'd be awesome.
It's in my book, Can You Go?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all over the internet, but just we'll make sure you get it to you, okay?
Thank you, that'd be awesome. Because, I mean, I think a lot of times, like, just, I mean, as like being older, like I'm 44, I'll be 45 here.
Older?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting
stuff
older.
In my teeth.
I roll my eyes. I'm 24.
I know.
So.
Stupid.
I got
Jesse.
Stuff in my teeth. Older than this guy.
Shut up, Kevin.
You're 24.
Yes.
Years?
Yes.
But
I love that joke. That's a joke I use. And the other one is when I find out, I'll say to a kid, "What grade are you in?" Sixth grade, I go, "Oh, that was the best 3 years of my life." That's my favorite jokes.
They get confused.
They'll look at you like, and laugh about it within about, "Oh, he's joking."
And then it's, then they're like, "Dad joke."
Dad jokes. I love my dad jokes, man.
My 11-year-old hates my dad jokes.
Love, hate, same
yeah,
thing.
Same
no
thing.
Difference.
But I think a lot of it's, like, I talked to Ethan Reeve before. And
love that guy.
He's like he's a genius.
Yeah.
Ethan is just brilliant. But he has a lot of his, like, when he's got his football players and he's got his strength and conditioning, when he does his strength and conditioning program, he does a lot of things with tumbling.
Yeah.
He believes big time in tumbling. And so I'm asking him, well, why? And he goes, when you're in a football field, he goes, a lot of times you're on the ground and you just get smashed and you're in all sorts of positions.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and if you're able to get back up, he goes, that's kind of the key, isn't it? He goes, get back up, get back into the play.
Mm-hmm.
So he says it teaches proprioception. He talks about how, like, it teaches, like, flexibility. It's dynamic flexibility. And do you believe in the same thing?
So when I coach football, we tend to do things like this. We'll go front squat, bench press, hurdle walkovers, a tumbling run, left shoulder roll, right shoulder roll, cartwheel left, cartwheel right, power snatch, and then back to the front squat, back to the, and you, that's how we circuit. So you're doing an Olympic lift and two power lifts with a tumbling run in a circuit. And I feel that really, well, also it makes it safe. It makes it end safer. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, the other team has an X on this board, on a whiteboard, and an O, right? And this O blocked me. But in the game, O blocked me, this little diagram, and I got back up and made the tackle. It's hard to program that.
Yeah.
It's hard to program people getting back up off the ground and making plays.
You've already been accounted for.
Yeah.
So when I started with Brandon, you met Brandon with me, and the first day of he's a high school strength coach in Michigan in Ann Arbor, and the first day we had the freshman group out, he was like, okay, everyone line up, we're on the football field. He goes, we're going to tumble and do cartwheels. And these kids are like, I'm sorry. They're like, yeah. I just want to lift, where are my weights? And he goes, if you want to hold a barbell above your head and you can't hold your body weight above your head, what makes you think I'll give you a barbell? Right. And the kids are like, oh. Kind of makes sense. And you're like, yeah, if you can't do anything with your own body weight, you shouldn't even be holding weight, you know?
We used to scare other teams. They would come like for like a basketball game and see our football team doing the Olympic lift, the power lifts, and the tumbling. And they'd be like, I mean, the game next fall is already over.
Yeah.
They're like, we can't do this. This is weird.
This is weird.
These guys will kill us, hurt us bad.
Kind of reminds me of that Mike Tyson interview that you were talking about, Mike. What was it called?
The Art of Intimidation, I believe it was, about how he, he explained that he's actually scared during his training. He's fearful that this man's capable of beating him. And as he's slowly making his way to the ring, he's gaining more confidence. And then by the time he gets to the ring, he steps in the ring, he says, I'm a god. He feels like he's unbeatable at that point, and he's staring at this guy. He's not taking his eyes off this guy. And he said the guy might take his eyes off of him for like a tenth of a second to look away, and he's like, in that moment, I know I got him. You know, he knows it's over.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big believer in preparation and performance, and I think that's where I think a lot of people don't understand my work well enough because they've missed the word perform. When they call my name, I mean, right now I'm 60 years old, but if Chris Poyer said, okay, here's this thing, and we're going to do this event, and I'm sitting there, and he says, Dan, John, you're up first. Oh, time to perform. I get bigger. I get larger. I get faster. I get more focused. And that's what I try to do with my athletes. I try to teach them to perform. I hate gym heroes. I don't want to hear about what you did in the gym.
Yes.
I always hear about this guy. I'll go to a track meet and, if Wally would have been here to beat you, but he wasn't here. He wasn't. Everybody knew at the Nationals at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning in Spokane. Everybody knows that. Everybody. That's what we say in my home.
Everyone.
Everybody. Everybody knows that.
Everyone.
So he wasn't there. And I might throw 160 in training, but by God, don't think that's what I'm going to do in competition. I'm going to throw 180, 190, because that's what you do. You perform. And so my knock on our industry, among a few thousand, is that everybody becomes gym heroes. And so when you read like my book, Now What, when I'm trying to get people to start thinking that performance should be better than practice, most people can't hear me. And it's funny to work with elite people. I'm going to talk about UFC guys and stuff who think that, who actually believe it's okay to be worse on the fight because they lost weight. Who cares you lost weight? They just called your name. And get out of those shorts. They look terrible on you. But do some squats. Get some thighs. And I think that's the hardest thing is that, you know, and I didn't know that about Tyson, but I can see it, you know. The idea that once I get on in the ring, it's a different story. I think what's ruining sports, among other things, putting the word elite on shirts. Hate that. Just because you can write the name elite doesn't make you elite.
Yeah.
Is this, I call it the montage from movies.
Oh, the training montage, yes. The Rocky montage.
Ruining sports. So, you know, so give me a high five, okay? This, Kirsty, is it, which, it's
Jesse,
sorry.
You just got to look.
Shush. So Jesse high-fives me right here, and we just got rid of sexism in America. Mm-hmm. Give me a high, we just got rid of racism in America. Give me a high, we just got rid of homophobia. And that's a joke.
Kevin.
You know, and it's like they do this scene, the white guy and the black guy are running hills together, and they didn't like each other, and now they do, like, they high-five, now we go win a game. It's like, athletes think that's the way it goes. It's like, God, guys, it's not 3 minutes. Yeah. It's 3 years, yeah, you know? And yeah. So we get this idea that, you know, you can suddenly turn on. But for me, training is preparation for the event. And we all know that. We all nod, yeah. But then the athlete sometimes doesn't know that performance, it should be better than practice.
Yes.
They don't get that. And I wrote now what I quoted a basketball player who said something along the lines of, practice? You're talking about practice.
Allen Iverson, yeah.
In a way. And it's funny because I don't like what he said because he said it publicly. But he's right, in a way.
Yeah.
And that's why it's too bad a great coach like the Jazz had a guy named Jerry Sloan who threw out all that nonsense. Famously, he wouldn't take – when he had Stockton Malone – every coach in the NBA loves to take a timeout at certain times. So the camera goes on him, and I'm going to teach these guys what to do. He was like, we went over this 1,000 times. They should know what to do.
Yeah.
And the other thing, he got rid of all that stuff. Like, tonight the game's at 7:05. Get there about, I don't know, 6. Okay, yeah. We'll see you at 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because these guys play 82 games. So how you go about it is how you go about it. You have to make different decisions with an adolescent versus an adult. But, man, performance is the thing we miss in our field. I get so sick of hearing about what people's CrossFit numbers are. No one cares what you did in the gym.
So how do you feel about RepMax training?
That's great.
Football kids and stuff?
When they called my name, we're at the Nationals, and they called my name. And if I make that lift, I'm national champion. Mm-hmm. If I miss that lift, I take 4th. My wife walks up to me right before the lift and says, Danny, we can't afford to come to this meet, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't have the money. We got kids in Catholic schools in Utah. We don't have the money to be here. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. She goes, we don't have the money for us to be here. I get your point. Can I swear on this telecast?
Oh, absolutely.
My wife looks me in the eye and says, make the fucking lift.
Probably made the lift.
There's a good chance. The official said he's never seen anyone run on the platform fast enough. My point, and I have one, is that's what a rep max is.
Right.
Yeah.
A rep max is when if I make this lift, I'm national champion. And I'm not getting this. If I miss it, go, can I have one more try? Oh, sure, you can because you're so pretty. No, I make the lift, I'm national champ. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what a rep max is.
Yeah.
So to me, I've got to teach my athletes to perform. And it's great and all to have all the great numbers. But, and I'll talk about this in my talk, which is coming up very quickly. The words I use are sort of max, max max, and max max max. Your true maxes, they have a story. Yeah, man, we were in the gym one time, and bro said to me, man, you can make this 200-pound bench. That's not a real max.
Yeah. Right.
That's a couple guys working out. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Do I believe in rec maxes? I'm with Marty Gallagher and Dave Tate, too. Dave said the same thing very famously to perform better. He goes, when I get a workout, and when I see someone's workout that says 90% any time before 6 months, I throw it away because I know they're not lifting big.
Yes.
My favorite line of all time from Dave Tate, where it's a perform better. He goes, raise your hand if you can bench 2. Boom. Here you go, babe, right here. I can bench 2. Raise your hand if you can bench 3. Yeah, still in it. Raise your hand and bench 4. Boom. I look around. I'm pretty much alone. Okay. He goes, I got 13 guys in my gym and can bench 800 pounds. Okay.
Yep.
My hand ain't going up no more today.
Yep.
So, but that's performance.
Right. That's the thing. You know, you get these football teams and the bigger, strong guy sports, they're like, well, we train rep maxes. We test and then we program out from their rep maxes. And I'm like, what are they rep maxing for?
Yeah.
When are they ever going to compete in their squat?
Agreed. I agree with you. Yeah. And that's why I think when I, as a football strength coach, when I slid to getting the intensity in different ways is when I think I've got better.
Yeah.
You know, I used to work for bigger, faster, stronger, and that's all about maxing. And,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think there's some strength to it. I mean, I think strength. I think there's some truth in it. But at the same time, I've never seen the numbers correlate from the weight room to the field of play. In fact, when you study Division I sports, one of the things you'll find is the backups always have better lift numbers than the starters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of factors there. But at the same time, don't fall in love. The great coach Bill Walsh, you know, it's a phrase we can't really use anymore, but he said, I don't want guys to look good in the showers.
Yeah.
You know, the phrase we use now is looks like Tarzan plays like Jane, even though that's sexist, because Jane was a badass.
Yeah, she was a badass.
Yeah, she had a 300-pound bench.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good, yeah. Yeah.
I forget who said it, but another football coach, he was like, you know, the guy with the biggest biceps is probably the worst player on the field.
Right.
Oh.
Same thing.
I played against the guy. I was a teammate of mine. I was a junior. He was a senior in high school, and he was the numbers guy. He had, of all the linemen, he had the best 40 time. He had the best bench in the whole program. He had all the numbers. And when he came out to hit you, you didn't notice anything.
Ooh.
It was like...
It's almost like you get these guys like Mike Mamula in the NFL Combine.
Oh, yeah.
And you see these guys and they're like...
Well, shot him to the roof.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was like a top, a top 10 pick? Maybe a top 15 pick?
I was top 5.
Yeah, and so like Mamula had like all the intangibles, all the variables. Like he had the numbers. He had like the speed and, you know, he had worked out for that Combine specifically. But he lacked it in the performance.
Yeah, they actually work out for the combine.
Right, he trained for the combine, not for the sport.
Right, and that's what I've heard ex-NFL players say the same thing, that, like, the guy, the gym warrior, the guy who lifts the most in the gym is not the best on the football field. He's like, usually it's the guy who kind of is like, he's built awkwardly. He's like, he might be 6'5", but has a 7'2" wingspan.
Exactly.
You know, he can scratch his knees without bending over kind of thing.
What was an issue we had in the early thousands after 9/11 is that we were sending on our first deployments. A lot of the guys, the first deployers, the guys who are special,
the initial push,
and they were showing up with lean, mean fight machines at 8% body fat for a 6-month deployment, and they're having all kinds of issues because they had no reserve. I try to keep as much reserve as I can in case they ever get called back up. I'm ready to go, baby. But the insight we got from that those days was that are we getting in shape for a photo shoot? Are we going to do the movie 300?
Mm-hmm.
My friend Mark Twite trained the guys. Mark came back and he showed me all the videos of the training and stuff. And at the same time, where the joke was, these guys look good in the photo op, but that's not the way you would train to keep that army, mm-hmm. the Persian army back. So sometimes, I'm gonna talk about this in my workshop. How many rabbits are you chasing? If you chase two rabbits, you go home hungry. And I deal with this all the time. I mean, I'll get a young kid who'll say, Coach, I want to come out for track. Okay, what are you gonna do? I'll throw the discus. Okay, good. All right, just good. Okay. But I also want to get bigger biceps because I want to look good for the girls mm-hmm. in summer. I want 6-pack abs, and I want to play in the NFL. Well, which rabbit do you want me to help you with?
Yes.
Because you just gave me 4 rabbits,
mm-hmm.
and none of them. And it was like what Tom Plummer last night said so eloquently about the guys who they put their pictures in their, their Facebook posts, and they got their all. And that's one picture one day of your life.
Yeah.
You know, you can get on me about how I look. I'm an ugly son of a bitch. I tell you, I know that. I know that, and I'm beat up. I got scars on every inch of my body. I've got, every inch of my body has scars. I mean, the only thing that's healthy is this ankle. That's
one ankle.
This ankle.
It's a good one, though. It's a good
it's
ankle.
It's mine, yeah.
Check, yeah. So if I die, run, get those. But I want you to look at my body of work, not mm-hmm. my body. Mm-hmm. I want you to look at, my first trophies from 1967. What year are you born?
72.
Yeah, you go. So I'm just, I'm just saying, my first trophies from 1967, I was still competing at a high level throughout the 2000s, and I just won a Highland Games a few weeks ago,
Where? Was that in
Arizona? Ohio.
Okay.
And then, last year I broke records at a Highland Game in September, at age 59, That's not bad, breaking field records at 59. But my point is, I could put the picture, you know, in fact, I have a picture here in there with me with abs, you know, but I didn't throw very far. You know, at 209, I couldn't throw very far, but I had abs.
Yeah.
How many rabbits are you going to chase?
Yeah.
How many rabbits are you going to chase? And that's something that really is hard to get across to some people.
And you also said the goal is trying to keep the goal the goal.
Actually, and the phrase comes from the military.
Yeah.
The mission is to keep the mission the mission. So we got a young Marine here, Kevin.
Kevin.
So Marines are really good at would you mind giving us the mission statement of the fire team?
Oh, yeah. The mission of the Marine Corps Rifle Squad is to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy by fire maneuver or repel the enemy assault by fire in close combat.
Jeez. That's not bad.
Yeah.
So Marines are really good at what he just said. You know, if the captain gets killed, the sergeant gets killed, your job is to just
attack.
Jump up and attack. Okay. They're not real good at running daycares. My point is, though, is that the Marine mission is what you just heard. The problem is they're now being asked to do a lot of things like build schools and, you know, do daycare. The mission is to keep the mission the mission. So I stole that because I'm a thief, and I turned it into the goal. Is keep the goal the goal. And we run into this all the time. You know, I mean, it happened to myself. I mean, there's a, I don't know if you guys see my Facebook page, but my sister found a picture of me in college. In fact, let's make sure we post this one too.
Absolutely.
It's a picture of, I can't get on Facebook now. Well, it's a picture of me as a junior in college, and I'm just walking over. I hope I can find it. We'll make sure we post it because, oh, yeah, it's this one here. And I'm walking over, so I'm a junior college, okay? And we'll post this one because it's a funny.
Absolutely, that's great.
So I'm walking over to where my mom and dad are sitting at a track meet, and you can tell that
you're a badass.
I'm a badass. I don't know. I've got pictures of me with weapons, but I tell you, I'm more afraid of that kid than I am the guy with the gun in his hand, you know? But, you know, I can remember doing stuff, and I was sitting around like this all the time, big traps, you know, just thighs. I couldn't, it was the 70s, so pants weren't made for men back then. You know, so I'd sit like this, and I used to wear overalls because I couldn't fit my thighs into anything. And I can remember one time someone doing this, just lean forward for me, just touching my belly and going like this, how about some sit-ups? And like, my thought at the time was, because, you know, it was 19 years old, you know, dumbass. A 4.0 dumbass. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just saying. Very smart dumbass. But I was like, God, yeah, maybe you're right. The person just touching my belly just told me to chase another rabbit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought you wanted me to throw the discus far for you, the Utah State University.
Yeah.
Do you want me to have abs or do you want me to throw the discus far? Because.
Pick either or.
I can throw the discus really far or I can work on my abs and throw the discus less. It's your call. But that's why I'm on scholarship, is because I chased one rabbit.
And isn't it interesting how hard that is for people to understand? How now, today, we're still having that same discussion, and people still come to the gym, athletes, clients, anybody, with that same question. They want 5 different things, 10 different things. I mean, they still haven't figured it out. You can only pick one. Put yourself into one thing.
So what you're saying is we got to... got to focus on one rabbit. What's your name?
Jessie.
So Jessica Rabbit.
See
where
I
see
what
that.
You did.
You see what I did? See how I put that? See how I did that? See how I did that? See how I did that? I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you forgot my name.
No, or I was making a very funny joke. You knew that?
I knew that was coming.
You saw it. You smelled that one. Yeah, you smelled that one early. Good. Good. So that's, but you're right. And the problem is, I think the fitness industry kind of feeds it in.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, you'll walk around here, no offense, these are quality people, but, you know, you'll see like this guy. Awesome. First chance they get, you know, in there, the guys be pulling their shirts off. You know, you go to the one down in Long Beach, and I got to tell you, some of the girls just might as well wear bikinis. Because, I mean, It's and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm a big fan of the human body.
God bless them.
I've had I've had my hands on the human. Well, okay, but what happens is that we fall in love with this idea. So it is a struggle sometimes for a young person, young athlete, to listen to me because I'm this 60-year-old guy, and I don't have six pack. Mm-hmm. Now I do have, you know, armacondas, but I don't have
armacondas.
But
like
I don't
that.
Have, you know, I don't. And it's hard sometimes. It's like, well, why would I listen to Dan John? You go online sometimes, and I'll read little reviews in my books. There's this one guy, like, from Pakistan, goes, you should still listen to him, even does he doesn't look like us. And this guy has a picture of himself. He's got to weigh 109 pounds, and he's clean and jerking. Maybe the bar and, like, the plates that you would have, like, a child use.
Yeah, the bumpers, yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, you wouldn't want to listen to me. Who cleans over 400 in his youth? You know, you want to listen to this guy who cleans 4. You know, but it's you can't get out of it. I hate to say this, and this is sexist. And I apologize, but females have it much harder.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
If you do a talk, and your pictures of you smoking hot when you were doing that contest, mm-hmm. and you're in a talk and you're normal, I guarantee someone will beep 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 beep. You know. I guarantee it.
Yeah, so and so's let herself go, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Chuck follows me on Instagram and he sees all the workouts that I post. But you make a decision, and as females, it's almost more important than it is for males: performance or looks.
Yeah.
You really can't have both as a female. Not as a male either, but even more so as a female. And
good point. Every woman I've ever been with has said, my performance is excellent. My looks aren't so much.
Yeah. That's usually my go-to.
Thanks for laughing. I appreciate that, guys.
I'll give it to you.
I'm just getting picked on. No. No.
Thanks for the laugh. I appreciate that.
But it's very true. No, I'm going to bring us back in.
No, it's very absolutely true. And you know what? Here's the thing. Let me tell you from my own life. So my daughter Lindsay was a Division I hammer thrower, and not look at me. She didn't date. Why don't guys want to go out with a Division I hammer thrower? She had big traps, you know. And it broke. You know, as a father, you know. Now, having said that, she's also. I mean, maybe even by the time I go home, I'll be, you know, we'll have an engagement. She met a great young man named Thomas. He played baseball, but you know what? I can forgive almost anything now. But he's a delightful young man. I have great respect for him. I do want to raise their kids. He's 6'4". And she's a Division I hammer thrower, you know. He was, you know. But at the same time, watching my own daughter go through it, it was hard. I mean, I'm an emotional guy, and I get it, but it was difficult, you know. And, you know, I work with a lot of women who are Olympic lifters and stuff, and it's like, you know, we are in a society that has terror. My God, I mean, I hate to say it, but your commander-in-chief has said things about women that I find appalling. Your commander-in-chief, not mine. And I don't know how we can get over it, but... it is in our field, especially. It's horrific. Mm-hmm. You know, people ask me why I don't put pictures in my books, because I'm doing a shoot tomorrow. But we have to hire female models for our fitness shoots who have a certain look. Mm-hmm. Because if you have normal women, you'll go to your reviews on Amazon and you'll read, you know, why do they have a big fat ass doing the pictures? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh dear God.
You know, yeah.
And we're not going to be totally free people until we get over that.
We did Mike and I did an interview with Janae Kroc, and we were talking about that like earlier. But we were talking, Janae, for those who don't know, Janae used to be Matt Kroc. Matt was the baddest son of a bitch on the planet. Like, he was like breaking Ed Cohn's records, and he was just like, he was breaking Eddie's records. He was a Marine. He was probably like, he was President Clinton's security detail. Right. And then, what was that, Mike? Yeah, but now she was mad. But now she's Janae. She's transgender. But when we were talking to her and we did the interview with her, she was saying how, like, as a muscular male, she got preferential treatment everywhere she went. She said she felt like as a muscular male, she would walk somewhere and people would look at her a little bit differently, maybe be intimidated, maybe give her a little more respect or whatnot. And then she said now as a transgender, now she's a female. So now she said she's on the opposite spectrum where she's a muscular female transgender, so she gets no respect. And she said she has a hard time with it because she's now dealt with both sides of the spectrum.
Well, which, God bless her. Because you know what? I mean, I got nothing but great respect for people who have the courage and bravery to
be true to who they are.
Yes, true to who they are. Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's one of those things you can tell how we are as a society by how we treat people who are on the edges.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I tell my daughters this, and it's a good thing. I always told my daughters, if you're on a date, watch how the guy treats the wait staff.
Yes.
And then number two, watch how he treats his mother or father. Because that's how they treat people.
Yes.
You know? And I got to be frank with you. Here I am. I was about to say middle-aged. I have to catch that. I'm an old fart, but I'm a white male.
Yeah.
So I would be an idiot to not recognize that I have an advantage. And it's true. I don't get tickets. A cop pulls me over, I usually yell at them. Literally, I yell at them for pulling me over. What are you doing? And they always, whoa, sorry. And I hate to say it, but you can't do what I do.
No. Fuck no. Yes, sir. No, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your ticket.
And
thanks
I yelled.
For letting me go.
I got pulled over one time with an six months expired license plate. Yelled at the guy. He apologized. He said, just take care of it today. Okay, I will. But I acknowledge the fact that I have that. And I think it's really important that we do that because we're forgetting that. The one thing, you know, I've got, you know, it bothers me in some ways because, you know, I am an immigrant. My father and mother are not from this country. And so I have great respect for what's going on. But at the same time, I cheated the system because I look like this. I got blue eyes and I got, you know, I'm I know I'm blisteringly tan. Gorgeous, but no, my point is that, I mean, it is true, and I'm glad you brought that up. We were discussing the first go-around about how bothered I was about your commander-in-chief with what he said about...
Kevin.
Well, what he said about transgenders this week, because, I mean, truthfully, what a squad that would be. Talk about a brick. I mean, if you had a squad made up of transgender and gay, openly gay people, and you were not... You're talking about bravery?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah, go tell Janae Croc she can't read the list. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Go tell Janae anything that she can't do, and she'll do it.
You know, get in the way. But again, if one of your guiding principles is the absolute dignity of every human person, you know, which is what we mentioned. Did I mention this in this one or the last one?
Let me just go real quick. Yeah, please do it. Please.
So, my family, we have three basic things. Our overriding values, the absolute dignity of every human person, which is a tough one at times because I want to punch people. Number two, our family motto is, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And my daughters love that because my wife and I both come from kind of impoverished backgrounds. And I was the smallest, slowest kid throughout my entire life. It's not where I started, it's where I finished. And then our family mission statement is make a difference. And so we do everything through the lens of will this make a difference? So, by the way, when we had this little hiccup with the recording today, my guiding statements, my mission statement, meant I was going to sit in this chair another hour. For those of you who come late, our first run through the hour talk didn't take. And so we're doing it again because I think this kind of thing, when we talk like this, it makes a difference.
I think so, too.
And if it makes a difference, then that's what I have to do.
And that clearly shows, like, you know, the type of man you are and your character. We definitely appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. And I hope it doesn't come off as faux or false or anything, but it's just who we are. I mean, it's who we are. So and it's weird. People, you know, when I was at Tom's thing last night, he was talking about income. And I discovered years ago, Earl Nightingale. If you get a chance, folks, Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field. It's available for free on YouTube. if you could link that up, changed my life. I'd gotten back from the Middle East. I had a liver parasite. I was 180 pounds. I'd lost 40 pounds in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, I was two times in my life I should have been, not three times, but two times I should clearly be dead. One, I got hit in the head with a discus in college, which is 140 feet, which is bad. Two, the liver parasite should have taken me down. So I'm sitting around, I'm living in a basement apartment. I've got, you know, in a fold-out bed from a couch. And I went to this thing called a library where there's books.
What?
Scare some of your listeners.
Physical books?
And I started listening to audio tapes when I would walk because I really was hurt, so I could only really walk. And Earl Nightingale's Lead the Field changed my life. And the way he said you don't make money. What you do is serve as many people as you can, and it all comes back to you.
Yep.
And last night with Tom Plummer, when I was sitting there, because, you know, I do financially, I don't know if I do the best in the field, but I'm not bragging, folks, I'm just telling you straight up. I think I do so well on income because I strive so hard to do what Earl Nightingale taught me, is the more people I serve, the more I get back in treasure of time, treasure, and talent. And if that would be a guiding force in what I try to do, yeah.
Well, it definitely shows. I mean, everything you... Like I said, I was always, like, somebody who read your stuff, and then when I had a chance to interview you the first time, it was, like, a huge honor, yeah. And now I get a chance to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah,
it's an even larger honor.
Yeah.
So,
and this was actually nice. I mean, maybe we need to practice, have an hour-long conversation, then do it again.
Yeah,
and then do it again so we get the practice session, you know.
I think it's a
good
idea.
This is performance. This time we perform.
Yeah.
You know, first time we're just practicing.
Yeah, we haven't performed until it stopped. So so what I am going to do is wrap this up because I know you have your talk here in about a half hour. I know you want to get something to drink as well. And, like, you know, Dan, I can't thank you enough for spending the time and being gracious with us, not only last night, not only with me before, but now again.
Oh, absolutely.
And particularly with that, with us not being able to, like, get the first talk, which if anybody could have heard it, like, we're in this group. The first talk was just as just amazing as the second one. So I can't thank you enough.
We'll have to do another one tomorrow.
I'm game.
Yeah,
love I'm
to
game.
Give you a couple hours worth of it. Thanks so much.
I'm game.
Thanks.
Thank
how,
you so
how am
much,
I doing
Dan.
On time? Do
you do, and yeah, you got about a half hour before you talk.
Okay, good.
So, and so for Jesse and for Mike and for Dan and for
Kevin.
We'll let you go. This is Chuck from Strength Depositions. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again.